Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the China Startup Pulse, your window into China's entrepreneurship and investment world, given to you by people who've been there before and experienced it. I'm Ryan Shukin, your host, and today we have an incredible guest, Trevor Owens, one of the founders of the Lean Startup Machine. Now, we've been on hiatus for a little while. We're really happy to be back, and this episode was well worth the wait. Trevor is one of the individuals who believes getting companies to find the consumer, getting them to have, show me the money, is one of the most important things. He talks about how the thing that unites all startup communities all over the world is that we all approach problems the same way. The Lean Startup Method helps us understand how to analyze the problem, the assumptions, and verify our riskiest assumptions so that we make the product directly for the users. We talk about how China is really the only place that's challenging Silicon Valley, and how all the Chinese investment is building up a situation of high competition, and how this lean startup method is a perfect element to give people the competitive edge. Finally, we talk about how the Silicon Valley used to be this place where the hardest working and then the most intelligent person was the one who persevered, but that right now there's a lot of studies showing that it's no longer a meritocracy, and his perspective is incredibly unique. But this is also about not being a unicorn, but being a company that makes money and that can be sold for millions or $100 million of dollars, how that's okay. And Trevor explains how this methodology helps you get there. So I'm really excited to get back into it. Here we go. Hey everyone, we are here with Trevor Owens, one of the founders of the Lean Startup Machine. And I'm going to give you guys a quick background, how he got to where he is and why he's here in the studio in China right now. So he first went to NYU Business School, and he was an entrepreneur at heart, starting the entrepreneurship community there. It's still going strong today. He actually left in 2010 to pursue his own ideas and his own startups. He had a few of them on the burner, went out to try to figure out which one's best, and the one that hit is the one that we all know, Lean Startup Machine. He ended up running that all the way and getting into Techstars in New York, raising money, building a software infrastructure, testing things, doing his own method, basically, with some things working, some things not, doing quick MVP, the Lean Enterprise, and finally figuring out what works, the Javelin, and things like that. And in that middle of all that madness, he even wrote a book, The Lean Enterprise, in the middle of that, which he'll talk about is the number one, the best way to brand yourself, no matter what. And now he's moved to China. He's here with his book translated into Chinese, running Lean Startup Machine workshops all over, and doing a book tour. So welcome to the podcast. How's it going, Trevor?
It's going great. Thanks for having me, Ryan.
It's really interesting that you've made the decision to translate your book into Chinese and come all the way over to China and start focusing on this market. And I kind of want to hit you on all that stuff real quick. But first, I want to talk a little about the inception of the Lean Startup Machine that you started. I mean, when you first started it and you were first coming up with the idea, there were very little resources in 2010. So how did this kind of get started for you? And how was it the one that really caught on? When did you see that moment?
Yeah, so when I was in New York City, I was very active in the startup community, both at NYU and at large. And I did that because I wanted to establish myself as a leader. I wanted to build my network before I started my business. And I had hosted over 100 events over the course of maybe a year and a half, from keynote events to hackathons. Actually, I hosted one of the first hackathons in New York City for students. And it's to this day one of the biggest hackathons in New York City. It's called HackNY. I started that with a few friends, and then it got taken over by some professors who turned it into a fellowship program. And
That's awesome.
I loved the framework of a hackathon, because you got to actually do something instead of just like sitting there listening to someone talk. But the problem with it was that the ideas that came out of it were not as I had hoped or as I had expected. The ideas that came out of it weren't really businesses. And very few of them could, even if they were business ideas, would be viable. So I came up with the idea to host the Lean Startup Machine. Initially, I just thought of like, what if we had like instead of a hackathon, like a sales-a-thon, where we go out and we try to like sell to customers.
Yeah.
And then I came upon Eric Ries's blog, and I saw like the Lean Startup movement kind of taking off. And I was like, well, let me try out what he's talking about. Let me try to put it within his framework and see how it goes. And the first Lean Startup Machine that we did was in New York City. I did it to solve my own problem of learning the process.
Yeah.
And the result that I saw was incredible, because every single person that went to that workshop changed their idea. And by the end of the workshop, they had a much better idea with actual customers.
Yeah.
So for me, that was a light bulb moment. It was a huge epiphany. And it's funny that after that epiphany, I didn't think that Lean Startup Machine would be a good business, because I thought, well, this is so obviously effective that everyone is going to learn this and there's going to be no need to run a workshop on it. However, that turned out not to be the case. Even to this day, I feel like there's more demand than ever before for what we're doing with Lean Startup Machine and the mm-hmm. education we're doing. But over the next few years, I started with what Eric Ries was talking about, and mm-hmm. I brought in other leaders from the industry like Brant Cooper, Patrick Vlaskovitz, Heaton Shah, many different thought leaders from around Silicon Valley, Sean Ellis, and I tested all of their materials. I tested all of their frameworks, and I started to see patterns in what was working, what wasn't working. Mm. And from that, we created our own methodology, which initially was a validation board, and then we turned into the Javelin board.
Yeah, which is one of my favorite things.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, just it works wonders with startups all over the globe.
Yeah.
I mean, you give them a framework in which they can test their assumptions and their ideas. They don't get stuck in the idea of this is going to work because I think it's going to work.
Yeah.
Like that's one of the most powerful things. But yeah, sorry. Go ahead. Keep on going.
Yeah. So today, like the methodology that we use is completely the methodology that myself and my co-founder, Gray Singh, have created. And so while we are called the Lean Startup Machine, we're really actually a stage further than Lean Startup. What you experience in Lean Startup Machine is not just Lean Startup, it's actually the next level of Lean Startup created by myself and my co-founder, Grace.
Mm, yeah. It's incredible to see teams, like you said, actually change their ideas and realize things that would be incredibly costly and risky all throughout their process, and then identify them and switch.
Yeah. And every day in the workshop, every time we have a workshop, we invalidate so many ideas that have received venture capital funding in Silicon Valley. So many times.
I mean, I bet you invalidate all these ideas, just not Silicon Valley, just globally.
Yeah.
These ideas, these assumptions, it's kind of like a lot of ideas, they move in trends. There's kind of a flow to them.
Yeah. So we even see the same ideas over and over again that get invalidated over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
we always see this one idea where people say, well, when you're a tourist in a new city, like you don't know what to do locally. And like, it'd be really great if someone could like show you what to do. And like every single time, like that idea comes up over and over again. And people are like, oh shoot, like people on vacation, like they're so happy that they don't even need an app to do anything. They're just like happy going to like someplace that isn't even that important.
Yeah. And it kind of also highlights the importance of super laser focus on what you're solving on that niche. Because a lot of startups, when they have their idea, it's very general. It's
yeah.
like people have this need because they feel this way because they are this way.
Yeah.
And you're like, no, that's not true.
Entrepreneurs, the most common problem, like I also get asked very commonly, like, oh, what's different from entrepreneurs in China versus in US versus mm. in Africa versus in Europe? What's the differences? And I'm like, everyone has the same problem. They start with a solution and they don't think about their customer enough
yeah.
and they don't even know who their customer is. And like you're saying, they're not really like laser focused. So the problem with entrepreneurs globally is like this solution oriented mindset, the sort of the myth of the entrepreneur of like him willing into existence his great idea is universal. And so our presence globally, we work with the same problems, helping entrepreneurs take a step back, go step by step through their idea, starting with the customer, getting it really focused and getting that initial, mm-hmm. that first dollar in revenue from a customer after changing their idea, of course, because almost no idea survives a lean startup.
I feel like we should describe the method a little bit for everybody, because we're talking about it in a lot of general terms right now. Could we give a 30-second, 45-second, 1 minute description of how this method works and what you're going to do?
So the Lean Startup Machine is a 3-day workshop. It starts on a Friday night. Everybody arrives, they pitch ideas, and they vote and form teams around the ideas that are most popular. Then after that, we teach them our framework, the Javelin board, the experiment board, as it's also known. And this tool, basically what we do is we have about a mentor for every team usually that's there for the whole workshop, who is either an experienced business person, someone who has failed in a startup mm-hmm. before, so they actually know like the benefit of being lean. And
qualifies me multiple times.
And they coach all the startups through the process, all the entrepreneurs through the process. The first step is like defining your customer and defining the problem that you're solving.
Mm-hmm.
It's so funny because there's so many entrepreneurs in this workshop who have never even done that before.
Yeah.
Where like their customer is like something very broad, right?
Yeah.
Even for those who have done it, their customer is very broad. We say like, who is your first customer? Like, who is your early adopter? Get very, drill down into where you're starting. And they define what's called the riskiest assumption, which is what is the core belief that you have as an entrepreneur that causes you to believe this is a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you define the riskiest assumption, it's like a really big light bulb moment, because what happens is you are forced to accept the idea that if the riskiest assumption isn't true, then your idea is bad.
Yeah.
And you should pivot. And so we actually, after you take them through that, they set like a goal for how much validation they need to succeed. Yeah. And they go out of the building on Saturday, on the second day. They go out of the building 3 or 4 times.
And out of the building means they're talking to people in the street. They're canvassing.
Yeah.
They're doing interviews on the spot. Hey, the open-ended interviews, or interviews where you're not trying to influence the person and you're trying to get their opinion, whether they really would need this or want to buy this.
Yeah. You're not selling them on your idea. You're actually trying to understand who they are and what their problems are. And we focus people through the workshop on taking a new idea through the process. We definitely do not like it if you bring an existing idea you've already built a prototype for, because then you're going to be like, when you hear the bad news, you're going to be sad. You're going to be really sad, and it's going to hurt your momentum through the process. And it's really important the first time that you just learn how to do it. They go to coffee shops, they go out of the building in mm-hmm. the morning. We teach them how to do customer interviews, because to those who haven't been trained on how to do customer interviews,
yeah, it's hard.
It's not obvious how to do it. Most people go up to someone, they say, oh, what do you think of this? And like, that's not what you're trying to do.
Yeah. No yes or no questions. You're trying to get people to do open-ended. But then you're verifying this idea in multiple ways, on multiple levels, trying to really zero in on what the customer is willing to buy and purchase. And at the very end of it, you're trying to get a currency or some
money.
Commitment. Yeah, some real commitment of currency.
Yeah, so we have two taglines. One is get out of the building, mm-hmm. which is what they do on Saturday, on the second day. And the second tagline is show me the money.
Yeah, I love
it. Like on the third day, it's like, okay, you validate a problem. So if it's really a problem, then make the customer pay for it first. There, like any early adopter will pay beforehand so that you can build a solution and solve it for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
So even if they've never heard of you before.
So I want to take this into a China angle now. So now we've kind of framed what this is, how you built it, what's going on. I want to talk about how this works in China and why not only are you here in China, but why have you even translated your book into Chinese to come bring this idea here?
Yeah.
So like, I know it works well in China. I can talk about all the ways it does, but I want to hear from you. Like, why does it work so well in China?
I actually want to hear from you though. I want to hear.
I'll tell you. I mean, it's actually part of China Accelerator's secret sauce. It's the idea that when we take a startup in that's, you know, made $1 million in 4 months in the US or in Europe or anywhere else, or we have a startup in China that's making a lot of money or that's doing really well, trying to go abroad, that they have these a set of assumptions of what their customer is and what they like and what they do and how they're going to approach their customer and the offering and all these assumptions. We get them to validate them. That's why when you walk in, you see all of our Javelin boards.
Yeah.
All the teams have them.
Mm-hmm.
We get them to think in the idea that their assumptions aren't validated. Whenever we ask them a question, they say words like think or believe. We challenge their assumptions. We challenge those words particularly to make sure that they're giving us data points. Well, when you believe that, how much is your belief? Tell me out of how many people told you that or gave you that data point or gave you that feeling.
Yeah.
So we're always challenging, and we're using our own adapted model of all these learnings and tests and ideas to help verify and build customer segments with these great teams, these great ideas.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But that's how we do it. But I really want to know, why does it work in your opinion from the person who's made it? Like, why is it working in China? Why are people accepting it? And why are you looking at translating your book into Chinese?
I think the question has two different parts. Like, why am I here in China? I'll start with that. It's obvious to anyone on this planet that China is the future, that it's the biggest market. China is the biggest market in the world with over 1 billion people here. And the reason I'm here is because there's been this force pulling me here. Actually, the decision to translate the book to China into Chinese is not my decision. It's my publisher's decision. Hmm. And they decide that because there's demand here in this market. So what happens is there's people talking about innovation here, about lean startup, about corporate innovation. And then the local publisher in China is like, oh my gosh, we need a book on this. And they go to my publisher in US and they say, they look at like the portfolio. And so they chose my book to publish here. We also just signed a global partnership with Microsoft to host. They're going to be running 100 workshops around the world in their innovation centers globally. And they brought me to China to host workshops here. So
But why? What, I mean, there's a lot of the market's accepting it. But can you pinpoint the one thing which specifically works excellent in China about that method? The one thing that changes people's mind, the thing that's bringing all the demand.
Yeah, I think the thing that's causing a lot of the demand is that what you have in China is you have a very effective central government. And the central government in China is actually investing $600 billion, mm-hmm. $600 billion in order to increase innovation in the country over the next 5 years, only 5 years. And so the demand that's being caused by this, you know, top-down forward planning is huge. I mean, mm-hmm. we already had thousands and thousands of startups in China. We have the biggest population here. So the sheer number of startups is huge, but we have a very strong backing from the central government in terms of in helping startups and helping the state-owned enterprises to transition.
Yeah.
Because in the US, the government isn't as involved in innovation because Silicon Valley just handles it, right?
Yeah.
Silicon Valley just handles it. But the downside of that is that you get a very like local power, like in Silicon Valley only. Mm-hmm. You don't get the same benefit throughout the entire country. And I think that with China, they're trying to really leapfrog the United States right now. And they know innovation is the way to do that. And so the government is the biggest corporation. Every government is the biggest corporation in the world. When it comes to resources, governments have way more capital than all of Silicon Valley combined. Mm-hmm. I think, so Silicon Valley is investing in the tens of billions per year.
Yeah.
Right? So all of Silicon Valley, tens of billions per year, whereas we have hundreds of billions just coming from the central government right now in China. Yeah. So
when I hear that, my first thought is that the Chinese are geared towards competition. Yeah. There's the Gaokao.
Yeah.
There is this test that every Chinese person has to take when they're studying to get into university. That is one of the most competitive tests I've ever seen in my entire life. People study their entire lives. They understand what competition looks like. But then you have the government putting all of this money into the space. That means, yeah, a lot of startups, but what I'm hearing is a lot of competition.
Yeah.
And any way that you can better your chances, lower your risk, invalidate assumptions,
yeah,
that's a benefit. That's a better way. That's a higher quality. That's a value add.
Yeah. And I think that we see a lot of demand for lean startup, not in Silicon Valley. We see a lot of demand in Silicon Valley. Of course, there's so many entrepreneurs, but we see tremendous demand all over the world. And I think part of it comes down to the fact that if you're an insider, then you don't need to think of you don't need to come up with a secret advantage. If you're an insider in Silicon Valley, then you don't really need lean startup, or you don't think you need it. But if you're someone abroad, if you're in China in one of the second tier cities, you're like, I need every advantage I can get.
Yeah.
And so that's most of the people that turn to lean startup are not the people in the insider club.
Are you here in Shanghai because there seems to have been a shift in Silicon Valley's global presence? Do you think this is the next place, or how do you feel about the startup scene coming up here right now?
So every country wants to create a Silicon Valley, but when it comes to people who are actually from Silicon Valley, we all know that the only potential place that could be the next Silicon Valley is in China.
Mm.
The only place that could ever compete with the Bay Area is in China.
Yeah. We see it, we live it, but it's really hard to communicate that.
Yeah. And I hope that it'll be better than Silicon Valley. I mean, I personally have a lot of issues with Silicon Valley.
Mm-hmm. And it's the old regime, right?
Yeah.
Of the way things are.
Yeah. Silicon Valley is not a meritocracy. In fact, I'm so glad there's a recent study that actually came out.
Yeah.
I think it was the Wall Street Journal, where they surveyed all of the top influencers in Silicon Valley, and they asked them different questions like, which company is the best to work for? And, you know, which is the hottest startup, and so on and so forth. And they asked, is Silicon Valley meritocracy? 53%, I think it was more than half of the people, said it's not a meritocracy.
Mm-hmm.
And this is entrepreneurship. There is nothing more than entrepreneurship that should be a meritocracy.
Yeah, I hear you. I think that this approach in China is a winning approach from personal experience and what we've seen in our own program and what we do and how we work with startups. The idea of invalidating assumptions about what your consumers do is something that enterprise you know, large corporations, they need to learn this, because when they come in with unlimited resources and the smartest team possible, they still fail. And that's the history. That's the writing on the wall in China.
Yeah.
Like it's incredible. So when you work with these corporations, these large companies, I mean, what's their kind of takeaway? What's their feeling about it?
Yeah, I think that with the large corporations, the toughest thing is that they don't incentivize entrepreneurs in the right way, or they're entrepreneurs. They want to just pay people a salary and they don't want to give them any skin in the game. And that sort of like ownership over what you're doing, and that idea of like the captain goes down with the ship, is central to being an entrepreneur and to being successful as an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And almost every corporation, they can have the great idea, they can have the great team, but the incentives within the company, within the larger company, end up killing those startups mm-hmm. for no good reason. It's the biggest tragedy, because we're dealing with multinational corporations. They have huge resources, huge distribution, and the impact that they're having and the innovation that they're bringing to their customers is nothing. Mm-hmm. They're barely innovating, yet they have the biggest influence on our daily lives, and they're taking no responsibility for improving our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, the innovations of the corporations is more important than Silicon Valley. And I think that we're going to see a merger between the two. Like, I want to see a merger between what the corporations are doing and what the entrepreneurs are doing, and the entrepreneurs to benefit from the resources that these mm-hmm. and the distribution of these big companies have. Because otherwise, you know, how are we going to really take society into the next stage without the help of the big corporations and the government?
Yeah. So I did a little bit of researching, and you can, you know, please correct me if I'm wrong, but I found that the lean startup, like Eric Ries's book and the lean startup method and all of that ideology, actually the ideation of that happened in the 1960s from a corporate sponsored project of a social scientist was looking at ways to make their corporate more efficient and better and sell better projects. And it was written about this corporation, about a best way to run in corporations. And the corporations looked at it, saw it, and was like, this is ridiculous. This is never going to work. This is the stupidest thing ever. And it became, from the 60s to the 70s to the 80s, picked up by different types of people all throughout time. And, you know, papers written about it, but it was really kind of cult, small, until it really got picked up by Eric Ries, and then it was made big by startups. And now that it's evolved, it's gone this full evolution by you as well in the Lean Startup Machine and in the Lean Enterprise.
Yeah.
Now we're feeding it back down those corporates' throats, saying this is exactly what, you know, it's finally ready. It's matured to the point where they can actually get benefit, or they think it's sexy enough. I'm not really sure which one, but it's so funny to look at the ideation of it, that it was actually started by corporates.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing new. There's never anything new, right?
No, it's a reiteration of something that's already happened.
Yeah, it's that the time is right, is really mm-hmm. what it's all about. Mm-hmm. It's that we're on the cusp of what I hope is a renaissance in corporate innovation, because we've had the startup renaissance and we've seen the tremendous benefits to society from this. And if we can also have a renaissance in corporate innovation, the benefits will be an order of magnitude even bigger than that.
That's excellent. So we're going to do a little bit of a lightning round right now. What do you think is the impact that this is going to have on China in particular, in the startup community or in the investment community right now?
China is going to surpass the U.S.
Really? This is going to, I mean, with all of the things that are happening on right now, you
I think feel the, like it's going the biggest thing that China needs to change is it needs to be more open to foreigners. It needs to be more welcoming and less of a black box.
Yeah.
Because right now, if you're in the U.S., you have no idea what's going on here unless you actually visit here.
Or listen to this podcast.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. So the other lightning round question that I want to get you on is, there's a lot of startups that are probably listening to this that are like, wow, this is amazing. This is great. I'd love to do this. And they're like, well, I want to test it. I want to verify it. I want to figure out what's the most basic way that they could start implementing, you know, these learnings or this idea right now. Tomorrow, they can go to their team, or they can do it themselves. Like, what's the basic way they can start implementing and testing this?
Yeah. I mean, go to our website, javelin.com, download the experiment board for free, print it out. You have to do the process with more than one person. I think it's impossible to do it by yourself.
Okay.
Because when you actually go talk to customers, it's very ambiguous. You come back and you're like, I heard these things, but I'm not really sure if this was what they're saying. But when three people all see the same thing over and over again, mm-hmm. it's a clear pattern. So I would borrow your friends for a day and just go out and do the process. Just go out and talk to customers. And, you know, if you can't find the early adopters, it's probably not the right idea for you. It doesn't mean the idea isn't going to be, isn't a good idea, but it means that you're not going to be successful in that business. And my goal is that instead of 98% of new businesses failing, that 98% are going to be successful in the first try. Because what I want to do is not create more unicorn companies. I want to create more successful entrepreneurs. I want to create just more millionaire entrepreneurs, because every like unicorn company, most of them, let's say Elon Musk, for example, he sold his first company only for a few million dollars.
Yeah.
And then he started PayPal and sold that for, you know, $1 billion and made $100 million himself.
Yeah.
Then he started Tesla and SpaceX. So if you want to start a $1 billion company, if you want to start a unicorn, it really helps if you already have $100 million in your bank account, right? If you want to start a $100 million company, it really helps if you've already built at least one successful company.
Yeah. And that methodology is really in sync with what's happening in the investment scene right now globally. People are not looking for unicorns right now. They're looking for, you know, companies that work, that are, you know, multi-million dollar deals or something like that. You know, they're just looking for things that are going to help them with their bottom line right now, because the search for the unicorns is a dangerous one.
Yeah. And just because something's a unicorn doesn't mean anything. I mean, the fact that something's a unicorn on paper, like look at Theranos, for example. This company didn't even have a good product that worked. And now after someone looked into it, you know, the house of cards fell down. And so, you know, focus on building a company that has a big impact on people's lives, on your customers' lives, and then making money is going to be easy.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have a whole lifetime to be an entrepreneur. Like turn off Facebook for a while, turn off what everybody else is doing. Focus on yourself, focus on what you can do to be successful and the impact you can have. And you're going to be happy, and we're all going to live a better life.
That's excellent. I couldn't think of a better sentence or an idea to end it on. So that was fantastic. Thank you so much, Trevor. How can people contact you, find you, read your book, work on your method? This is your opportunity to kind of plug that.
Yeah. So follow me on Twitter. I'm at T-O for Trevor Owens. Terrell Owens. Sorry, man. I got the handle. And you can, you know, sign up for Lean Startup Machine in your city. Hopefully we're hosting one soon. Also at Lean is our Lean Startup Machine Twitter. Or if you're on WeChat, you can just add me, Owens Trevor.
Awesome. Hey, thank you so much for coming. This has been really great.
My pleasure.
All right. And thank you to everybody out there, all the listeners. We really appreciate you guys. Thank you to David, our sound guy. Thanks to Vivian, our producer. And we'll catch you guys on the next episode. See you guys. Hey everyone, I want to take a quick moment to thank our sponsors. China Accelerator is the number one internet accelerator in Asia. It's part of the SOSV Accelerator family, which is 9 accelerators all over the world in 4 verticals: hardware, food, biotech, and internet. It is a 3-month intensive program that's mentorship driven, focused on demo day, getting your product and your market and your fit just right. China Accelerator does cross-border innovation, bringing ideas from all over the world into China and Chinese ideas out into the world. You can find out more and apply online at ChinaAccelerator.com. Entrepreneurs wanted. People Squared is the original co-working space in China. It's your home for startups, no matter what you're working on. Small team or large, it has all the resources, the environment, the culture, everything that you need to take your idea and make it successful. Founded by Bob Jung, an entrepreneur himself who really understands what startups need, it's a great place to bring your team and find success. You can find out more at people-squared.com. Our syndication partner is techno.cn, the number one resource for information about startups in the investment environment in China. They focus on getting the word globally about what's happening and growing in China in terms of trends and startup evolutions. You can find out more at techno.cn.